You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Right now, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate it. Bright and early, we've made it halfway through another week. We just have to hang in there a couple more days for the weekend. We can do this. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. We're glad you're here. Yeah, we'll see if we can make it because we know, even though it's Wednesday, there's so much more that's going to come out this week, and we're going to cover it all. We're glad you're here. A lot to talk about today. But the big news to start off with is, and we've touched on this, we touched on it yesterday, we touched on it before, the Clintons have agreed to appear for depositions in the Epstein probe. This means there will be no contempt vote holding them in contempt. They've set dates. Jamie, this is big news.
And it is.
The Clintons, even though Bill Clinton has not been accused of any wrongdoing, he was in some pictures with Jeffrey Epstein.
And so is the president.
So are a lot of people. And this is, right. And I'm going to, you know, this is another, sometimes arguments can be simplistic because that's the way a lot of people understand it.
Right.
You know, there have been a lot of defenders of keeping the Epstein files closed going, well, Bill Clinton was in there, Democrats. What are you going to do? I'll tell you what we do. If he's proven guilty of anything, we put him in jail. That's
absolutely
what we do.
Absolutely.
So yeah, when are they going to speak to Congress?
Yes. Hillary Clinton will actually, they're both testifying, by the way,
yes,
which I also find fascinating. I feel why does Hillary need to be there? I don't understand.
Benghazi.
Probably.
We're going to rehash Benghazi.
You know, she had that email server too. So I'm
I
sure there's still questions. I'm sure there's still lingering questions that these Republicans have about that email server.
I also heard she has Hunter Biden's laptop.
This is right. I'm sure that she's got that hidden somewhere. Probably right next to her email server, I would assume. Keep all the electronics together.
In the basement of a pizzeria. It's all there in crates.
I would like to say that we're just like riffing and making these things up off the top of our heads, but no, these are actual stories that circulated for a really long time, and there's still people who...
And let's not put it past Congress to go, or the administration to go back in time. Take a look at Georgia, folks. It's not 2020 anymore.
No.
But we're still recounting an election for the umpteenth time.
It's a little insane right now. But Chairman James Comer says that Hillary Clinton will testify on February 26th. Bill Clinton will testify on February 27th. Comer says that this agreement is a win for transparency and accountability after months of back and forth that included threats of contempt votes in the House. What I would say is that this is a win for transparency and accountability if all of the other people, the president, Howard Lutnick, maybe Elon Musk, were all also trotted out and given the same treatment and also made to testify and have the same basically process given to them that the Clintons have. And again,
that was going to be my question.
Yeah.
Is it transparent if only one person who's named in the files or has pictures in there and another person who really has nothing to do with it at all?
Right.
Have to come in and testify, and nobody else does. That is not transparency. That is political targeting.
It is political targeting. There is still disagreements over how these depositions will actually be handled. Republicans say the testimony will take place behind closed doors as standard committee depositions. The Clintons team, meanwhile, insists that this testimony should be public and says that they're fine with the cameras rolling. Let's listen to cut one. This was James Comer, what he had to say yesterday.
Look, it could set a precedent. I think, one of the things that we're talking about today, the video, the deposition will be videoed. That was never a thing until the Democrats set a precedent to video the January 6th deposition. So now there's a precedent to do videos. This isn't about helping President Trump. This isn't about protecting President Trump. This is about doing two things, what we've said all along, getting the truth to the American people about what happened with the whole Epstein saga, and secondly, how did the government fail the victims? That's the purpose of the whole investigation, and it's bipartisan, and hopefully the Clintons will hopefully have some information that'll be helpful to us getting answers.
Point of order, sir. First of all, it's precedent and yes. setting precedents. Learn the words. Very simple. A couple letters. I know it sounds petty, but it is. And also, what?
Right.
What do you mean we're getting to the bottom of this investigation? You're bringing in one person who hasn't been accused of anything, who is begging you to do this in
right.
public. Begging you. And you are saying no. So it is obviously about protecting someone.
It is. It is.
I don't know who.
And what's interesting is the subpoenas themselves. You heard Comer mention these video recorded depositions yeah. when he was talking there. The subpoenas themselves explicitly allow for those video recorded depositions, even though House rules don't require them to be open hearings. Yeah. Location right now is also unresolved, with the Clintons pushing for New York City rather than Washington. I mean, that's where they live. They're a little bit older. Yeah. They probably feel like they're doing the Republicans a favor by actually showing
exactly.
up, right? And they just want this. I'm going to assume that this is one of those cases where Bill and Hillary were sitting around looking at each other and like, oh, here we go again. They're still not yeah. done with us, right? So let's just get this over with. Because you got to think at some point that's their attitude after all of the years of the GOP bringing them in or trying to embroil them in scandals that were
something.
Maybe not scandals. So
I wish the GOP would look more toward the future and less toward the past
mm-hmm.
because they live in an era of blame the past instead of let's move toward the future
right.
and let's listen to our constituents and do what's best for the country. No, we have to find a scapegoat for everything that we have done wrong in our administrations. And it's tiring.
Right.
It's just take some responsibility on your own.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it just stop.
Now, we will point out once again that neither Bill nor Hillary Clinton have been accused of wrongdoing related to Epstein. Nobody has so far with the release of these files. Both deny any knowledge of the crimes. And I think it's important to mention that no Epstein survivor has publicly alleged misconduct by either of them. And
right.
I can honestly say when you listen to the testimony and listen to some of the survivors speak, that's not necessarily true of other people who are mentioned
no.
in these files. So I think that's an important caveat to remember as we watch these hearings or these testimonies, whatever we're going to call them at this point, proceed, because I think that's a very important point for everybody to remember going forward.
Now, we talked about Comer saying that this was good for transparency, which it obviously is not. Again, I know I was a grammar Nazi with him, but I also think he doesn't quite understand the word transparency. So a lot of people get to higher echelons of government without really having a basic grasp
right.
of the English language, which is terrifying. But the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee is actually pushing for this and saying,
yeah.
yes, public hearings and letting the Clintons do this in open court, basically, is good for the American people. And I think that's true. We see a good chunk of the American people, even when the January 6th hearings were televised, still didn't believe them, still thought it was all a witch hunt or a
mm-hmm.
hoax or whatever adjective you want to put on it. So, yes, I think it's good. It's always good to watch the people testify, because then
right.
you're not getting a spin from either their people, news people,
yep.
anything. It's here. We watch the officials ask them a question. They answered it. Now you've heard it. You decide what you think.
And this is starting to feel really familiar with this GOP, right? And we've kind of seen this play out before, where they want testimony in private, and then they selectively release only what they want after the Republican majority has time to really frame it, spin it, decide what narrative best serves them at this particular time. And we actually saw that play out just a few weeks ago with Jack Smith and his testimony,
yeah.
right?
Right.
So this is the same movie. It's like Groundhog Day. We've seen it before. The real question to me right now is it really whether or not the Clintons have something to hide? To me, it's why Chairman Comer would want to hide this. So if Republicans truly believe that
exactly.
the Clintons are guilty of something, why not put it out there in real time and then let everybody in the public judge for themselves? Why are we trying to keep it behind closed doors and not make this a public proceeding? That's my question.
Well, it's the same question you could have with the Epstein files. Other than redacting the victims' names and anything that identifies the victims, why so much redaction?
Right.
That's their game plan. And this is just another form of redaction.
Sure.
Keeping everything behind closed doors. It doesn't, most people who, you know, watch TV and movies, they see these legal things. And we all think, well, if you've got nothing to hide, why don't you just testify? Now, in court, and I've talked to attorneys about this, they say, well, that's not always the best way if you're on trial for, like, if you're on trial for murder, Jamie, they don't want you
right.
testifying. So just keep that in mind down the road.
But, I will. Good note. I'll put that down now.
Again, I'm not an attorney, so my advice is worth exactly what you paid for it. But if you're not hiding something, if you truly want to be transparent, you need to release everything. You need to let people hear the testimony, because this isn't going away just on the Democratic side.
No.
This is not going away ever.
Yeah.
And if it turns out that all of these allegations are founded and you've been covering this up, you're going down too.
Yeah, no, and they should. I mean, that's just it. Even if they're idols, it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum they're on. If it embroils celebrities, whatever it is, if you are guilty of these crimes, you need to be prosecuted. And really what's happening right now with the Republicans, the lack of transparency isn't surprising. To me, it's actually more telling, because they don't want truth. They don't actually want oversight about this. All they want is the control. They want to control the timing. They want to control the messaging. They want to control the headlines. And this is a tale as old as time with this particular party. We could go all the way back to the Benghazi trials if we wanted to with Hillary Clinton to see the same story play out over and over. This is nothing new. It's this type of sham proceedings that we see over and over from the GOP in Washington, unfortunately.
And if we go back even farther, you go back to like Watergate, and mm-hmm. then you look at the role the press had in uncovering this and really digging in and questioning authority and holding people's feet to the fire. And that has changed, which leads us into what you're going to be talking, what we've got on tap after the break, because we see from the president belittling Caitlin Collins repeatedly in the Oval Office and no other journalists standing up. We do see some good reporting, some investigative reporting, but with the amalgamation of ownership in the press and everybody,
independent, you know, journalism, independent journalists. I love them. They're awesome.
And they're not, and you're, yes, they are awesome and we need them. And yet we're not seeing too much of that anymore.
We're not. And no, you're right. We have a really important guest who's going to join us in just a few moments. His name is Seth Stern, and he is from the Freedom of Press Foundation. Because obviously, as we talk about independent journalism and we talk about these hearings, these public records become more and more important, especially right now. And so Seth is going to discuss with us a little bit about Don Lemon and the arrest and what this particularly means for journalism going forward. Because you're right, journalism right now, I've been in journalism a long time, Brian.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of friends who have been in journalists for a long time. I've been in newsrooms, and this is not like anything I've ever witnessed or grew up in. And it's a little mind-boggling to me with the lack of pushback. And I don't know if you know, but female reporters are now supposed to smile. That's what the president told them yesterday.
I think that's good advice all the time. Ladies, come on, smile a little bit.
Where are our
don't
manners?
Don't be so tough.
Where are our manners?
Why with the questions?
It's 6:19 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Seth Stern after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Thank Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Jamie Martinson. And over the last few months, I'll say months because this Trump administration has taken their anger and their aggression out on the press. And we've seen that happen in multiple ways from different things that they have said. And most recently to the arrest of Don Lemon for being in a church during a protest. And we wanted to answer some of the questions surrounding that arrest and what that could possibly mean for journalism in this country. Because, as we all know, journalists are protected under the First Amendment. We've got just the guy to explain some of this to us this morning. His name is Seth Stern. He is the chief of advocacy for the Freedom of the Press Foundation. And at one point in time, he also worked as a media and First Amendment lawyer. So, Seth, good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
So we want to clear up some of these misconceptions, and maybe from a legal standpoint, you can tell us what actually happened with this Don Lemon case. What immediately stands out to you, first and foremost, about the arrest of Don Lemon for being in a church? Is that essentially, first of all, let me ask, is that essentially what it was? Was he in a church just being a journalist? He wasn't even protesting. So what stands out at that point to you?
Right. He followed protesters into a church. He was not one of the protesters. He was there to document a protest that clearly is newsworthy. The reason that the protest targeted that church is that the pastor there was a higher up in ICE. We're talking about Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. There's every reason why a higher up in ICE would be the subject of protest in Minneapolis. But what really jumped out to me about this is the fact that they pursued Lemon and also Georgia Ford, another independent mm-hmm. journalist who was arrested. More recently, it sounds like Lemon's producer might have also been arrested. They pursued them not only by applying with one judge and then appealing after that judge declined to authorize the arrest, but seeking a grand jury indictment a week later. You know, normally when you see journalists arrested covering protests, it's a situation where there's a chaotic scene, tempers are high. Journalists are sort of looped in with protesters when cops are arresting everyone. Mm-hmm. They're accused of trespassing or obstruction or some relatively petty state-level misdemeanor. Oftentimes, they are released without being booked, or if they are charged, the charges are pretty quickly dropped. Because prosecutors wise up, cooler heads prevail, everyone mm-hmm. realizes it is not in the public's interest for us to spend our time and taxpayer money prosecuting journalists. It will have a chilling effect on journalism if journalists believe that they're going to get arrested for doing their jobs, even if we could technically fit their conduct into some element of with the elements of a recognized offense, trespass or whatever it may be. Here you've got a situation where it's sort of inverted. Instead of looking for reasons not to prosecute journalists, only doing so as a last resort because of the importance of news gathering to our democracy, you've got an administration that is looking for any kind of gotcha claim it can find to go after journalists. You know, someone is burning the midnight oil, figuring out that this law exists that makes it a federal offense to interfere with a religious observance. Now, under that law, nothing Lemon did right. would constitute a violation. One, the law requires intent, Lemon's criminal intent. Lemon's only intent was to document news, and Georgia Ford's only intent was to document news. The kind of interference that it contemplates, physical obstruction, threats of harm, threats of physical mm-hmm. harm, things that nobody on the scene did.
Yeah. And we're talking with Seth Stern. He's the chief of advocacy for the Freedom of the Press Foundation. And you mentioned the chilling effects that this will have on journalists. How does this change? I've worked in journalism. I've worked in a newsroom. How does this change how journalists will start approaching major news stories, especially the real time on the ground, if they think that this is a ramification of doing their job?
Right. Well, of course, the prospect of getting arrested at some level, no matter how courageous and bold someone is as a journalist, having that in the back of your head is going to impact your decision making. It will have different impacts for different people. I can't predict across the board how it will affect all journalists, but just like Trump's SLAP suits, strategic lawsuits against public participation, that's a legal, you know, acronym, his frivolous lawsuits that he files in retaliation for journalism he doesn't like, It has an impact. It makes people be a little bit more careful. It makes them think twice. I don't think that journalism is just going to roll over and die, but it is going to have some incremental impact. And I would encourage journalists who have the impulse to self-censor to remember that this is not your traditional Department of Justice that only brings really solid cases and has a 90-something percent conviction rate. These guys bring a bunch of bogus cases and lose all the time, because they're not looking to bring meritorious prosecutions. They're looking to make headlines and intimidate people.
We have just about a minute or so left. And I guess to wrap up today, I would ask the question, what should we as the public be doing to demand more, I guess, from this administration? Because we need fair news. We need to see that play out. So what should we be demanding right now from this administration to make sure these things don't continue to happen?
Well, we've seen that public pressure does work. We saw what happened in Minneapolis. We saw what happened with the Jimmy Kimmel cancellation. And unfortunately, people do tend to react more so to these moments when there is a recognized name, a Jimmy Kimmel or a Don Lemon involved, than they do to the day-to-day harassment of independent journalists, or just sort of corporations that offend Trump. So I think we need to use this moment as a tipping point and speak out and be vocal and let the administration know, despite the struggles of the news industry, the American public still cares about its right to information.
We're gonna have to wrap it up right there, Seth. Thank you so much. Seth Stern, the Chief of Advocacy for the Freedom of the Press Foundation. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. Right now, we hope you are having a great start to your morning. And if you are listening in Oshkosh or Appleton on WISS, thank you for having us on, or maybe even in Richland Center on WRCE. We're also glad that you are joining the program this morning. Remember, if you have comments or, you know, you'd just like to chat this morning, say hi. 1-855-752.
Small talk would be welcome.
That's right. 4842 1-855-75-CIVIC. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And yeah, we have many other stories to tell.
Me
so
too.
If you just want to chit chat, the Boyquarium won't put you through, but just know we would welcome it. But the Boyquarium is very strict about it. They're gatekeepers.
It's not true.
They're
not true. It's
they're stifling
okay, it's true,
the free
it's true.
Speech of the
All right, it's true.
100%. You do your jobs well, and we appreciate it.
Yes, you do your job,
so we
can look lovely, yes, and we don't have to. We can be, oh, well, we would talk to you, but it's...
Fine. The Boyquarium said no today.
Boyquarium said no.
I thought this was an interesting text, and I want to point this out. It came across on our Facebook page this morning. Roger, listening to the stream via Facebook, says that now Trump is demanding $1 billion from Harvard University, punishing the school for tolerating anti-Jewish bias on campus. Admission to his Board of Peace, $1 billion. Demand for Mar-a-Lago search, $1 billion. Demand from University of California over UCLA protests, $1 billion. Is there a pattern here, says Robert, or says Roger,
IRS,
I'm sorry, Roger.
Suing the IRS for?
Yes, $1 billion.
A billion.
Yes, and it's interesting because there was just some big news out last week that through this first year of his presidency, he has benefited by $4 billion with a B, folks,
yes,
from being president of the United States. But they're supposed to divest. Just saying.
Right. But well, he says, oh, well, it's all in trust. My children run those companies.
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of it came from the crypto. I don't want to say scam. The crypto business that the
anything I don't understand is a scam.
Into.
Let's be real. Anytime I don't get it, it's probably a little bit of on the scam side.
When his name is tacked to the front of it, yeah.
Yeah.
It you know, universities are not a scam, but his was. Omaha Steak is not a scam. They have fantastic meat. Trump scam. Water, scam.
I like a
casino,
good...
Trump casinos, scam.
Scam, yeah. I like a good bottled water every now and then.
Do you?
I do.
I'm a tap guy. I'm not a, you know, Jamie, I'm not one of those
not
highfalutin...
Not the finer things.
No.
Just common folk kind of thing.
I have a common... I like to present as a man of the people, while in fact, I am a man that likes to be separate from the people.
I also understand that.
It's all public image, which I just blew up. All right. Now, you remember just a couple years ago, and by a couple years ago, I mean last year, the Wisconsin Supreme Court race and Elon Musk pumping in untold millions, it was told, but it was a lot.
Yep.
And he thought he would buy the race, that there would be a Republican elected to the Supreme Court. That did not happen. Well, guess what? There's another Supreme Court race, and the money is... pouring in again, not to the extent yet of the last one, but
it's
man,
early.
Oh man, Wisconsin is one of the few places that I've lived that I remember Supreme Court races getting this much press and this much money flying into them.
It's actually unbelievable. And you mentioned Elon Musk. Just to remind everybody how expensive that race was, the most expensive race basically in history, just over $100 million to as high as $144 million. And that wasn't just the Republican candidates. That also was in support of Judge Susan Crawford. Susan Crawford spent over $40 million on her race. And Brad Schimmel, if you remember Brad being in that race, he was supported by nearly $50 million. And then there was an additional $30 million that went toward petition efforts that were tied to the race. Much of that was affiliated with groups, you know, that kind of associated and had Elon Musk's name attached. But we don't talk about those things. But you're right. The money here in Wisconsin is starting to come in at a pretty rapid pace, I should say. And it turns out that Judge Chris Taylor is vastly outraising Maria Lazar at this particular point. In fact, Judge Taylor has already raised more than $2.5 million, about 10 times what conservative Judge Maria Lazar has brought in so far. And in Wisconsin, even if you're a money out of politics person, which I am, because I think it's unfair for both sides to have that kind of spending advantage.
Right.
But and who wants their elections bought? Let's be real. But the advantage
everybody
matters.
Everybody, obviously.
Because in a state
especially
where...
Especially judges. That's
right.
Like, come on.
Right. These are supposed to be fair, impartial people, and we're buying their elections. It's crazy. But in a state where recent spring elections have reshaped the courts, liberals already have a 4-3 majority. If Taylor wins, obviously that would be their fourth straight Supreme Court victory in just a few years. The contrast in support, though, right now is pretty stark, Brian, because Taylor's campaign is powered by thousands of small dollar donors. In fact, their camp is reporting that they have about 11,000 small dollar donors, which are making up about 80% of Chris Taylor's coffers right now, which is that is pretty substantial when you think about it. And is this Wisconsin saying, get out of our politics? Like, if Elon Musk can donate, we can too, even if it's only a couple bucks at a time? I think it's fascinating.
And it is fascinating, and it does all add up. And that truly is the voice of the people. That's not we bought this election. That is the citizens of Wisconsin are saying, this is the person we want to back. Yes, we can only send in $25 or $50 or $100, but this is who we want.
Yeah. And Lazar is reporting that just 25 donors, about 25 donors giving $100 or less, which accounts for about 22% of her current donor base. Now, Taylor has raised more overall money from Wisconsin donors than Lazar, despite also drawing some national support. Taylor also uses consultants at a much lower rate, though, than Lazar is. Lazar's campaign is very consultant-driven. About 90% of her expenditures are currently going to consultants. For Chris Taylor, it's only about 28% of her money going towards consultants. So it's kind of like when you try to be a real human being with actual principles, you don't need people to polish you up quite so much.
Yes.
just pointing out some things this morning. It's fine. It's fine.
My brother worked in politics for years and years. He ran big statewide campaigns. I saw the inside of campaigns. It is a nasty business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how you want the government to run. It's not how you want the people who are going to represent you to be elected. But that's what we have. Yes, taking money out of it would change it. If you look at just these two cases that you're citing here, you can outraise. If you're a good candidate, you can outraise your opponent just with regular folks.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need so much, and maybe you do, maybe I'm naive, all this money for a Supreme Court race on television and radio ads and all this stuff and consultants. It's like, just be a good candidate.
Right.
Tell people who you are.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds very Pollyanna, but
it's not,
isn't that what we want? Because there's a race for Cook County president going on now. I know one of the candidates. I know the commercials against them are lies.
Right.
But it's that's where all this money gets spent on all this negative campaigning.
Yes. And what I think is interesting is, we want to point out one side or the other doing it. And that's not true at all. Both sides are investing way too much in their politics and using
100%.
Outside donors. This is not just a Democratic thing. This is not just a Republican thing. It's happening on both sides. And I find it interesting because money in politics, we can have this big debate, but it's really how we got to where we are right now, right? By having too many big level donors. And too often it feels like our representatives are being chosen by the wealthy and not by the people they're supposed to represent, which is why I am fascinated and also enlightened to see that most of Chris Taylor's funding is coming from regular people, regular people who might actually want to see her make a decision for their best interest on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And that gives me hope, honestly. It really does, because it means that people are paying attention to what's happening around them. And they are also putting their foot down on big money in being involved in politics and also saying, we don't want you to be involved in who we choose is our representation. They want to choose it themselves.
That's why I was so buoyed by the last Supreme Court election. Wisconsin said, listen, we don't want outside people coming in with all your big money and trying to buy us. We are not for sale. We will vote for who we want to vote for. Your outside money isn't going to work. That's one place you could start the limits. If you don't do business in a state, you don't get to be part of giving money to a statewide election. You know, if you're a multinational company and you have a big headquarters in that state, okay, you can get involved because you are invested in the community. But other than that, keep your mitts off.
Right. And what I also appreciate about Chris Taylor's campaign right now is pulling this much grassroots support. This is a talking point for Democrats a lot. You know, we want money out of politics, but yet they go through and they have big money donors. So I often think that it's a little hypocrisy involved because that's what happens in politics. But in this particular case, with what Chris Taylor is doing, and obviously there's going to be more numbers that are going to come out, and she's probably going to have some bigger number donors, some big name donors. I get that. But at least right this very moment, the Democrats tend to be practicing what they're preaching. preaching and what they're saying, and they're actually doing the grassroots donors. And I know there's been other candidates across the country that have relied on those grassroots donors, but at the end of the day, when you're in a really competitive race, they also have to rely on big money that they get from the Democratic Party or whatever it happens to be, right? Right. And because you have to be viable in those races when you're competing as well, especially if you want the seats. And we know that this is going to be a really competitive midterm. You know, and
so buckle up until April 7th, because you are going to be pounded with TV and radio ads. And listen, we, as a media company, we don't mind, you know, election season.
We'll run an ad
for
or
the
two.
Influx of, yeah, we'll sell those commercials
that's
to
right.
whoever, you know, we have to sell them to both sides. That's the law. So just get ready to go. Why are we always hearing ads for blah,
yes.
blah, blah, blah? Well,
yes.
because, you know, that's the law. But other than that, if you're a regular voter, you don't want to hear all these ads.
No.
You know who you're going to vote for.
Right.
You know why you're going to vote for them. And it doesn't matter how much money gets spent. And that is evident, especially here in Wisconsin, where we've already said, nah, your money doesn't buy our elections.
No. Elections should always be about the voters. They shouldn't be about bankrolls. And the more that idea can be normalized going forward, the healthier the democracy is going to be. And boy, oh boy, do we know that this is not a healthy democracy right now. So
yeah, see, now who's being Pollyanna about how elections should be? I'm not the only one with pie in the sky dreams.
I'll always have pie in the sky dreams when it comes to the Constitution, because, oh, by the way, it still exists and we still need to follow it to some extent.
Well, the president believes it. However, there's no however after I believe in the Constitution. That's it. It's the Constitution.
It's the Constitution. It's
no
a law.
However.
It's been there for a really long time, and perhaps you should study the history. That would certainly help. But I think this Supreme Court race is going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yes,
and
it will.
We'll talk more about it. Maybe a drinking game here on the morning show for all the ads. We'll see it in here at some point.
I'm down for that.
We would be so drunk by 8 o'clock.
We would. 6:48 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
When we come back, how much technology are you willing to have in your home? Oh, we'll talk about why I asked it on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 6:52 right now. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Love that song.
The question for you, I do too. How much technology are you willing to have in your home? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The reason I'm asking this, we've been inundated, and I am not a Luddite. I enjoy technology to a point. I do not want any technology in my house, he says, knowing that his phone is listening, his TV is listening, the doorbell is probably listening, everything is listening. I don't necessarily want to make the conscious decision to bring things into my house that are listening.
Right.
But other people do. There is a new robot. Would you want a robot in your house, Jamie?
No, I don't even have an Alexa in my house for various reasons.
All right, good, because I don't either. What are your various reasons?
My various reasons are just what you stated. Everything's always listening. I don't need it to tell me things when I'm not asking it, and I find them a little creepy with these voices that just come out of nowhere. I also have been in homes where Alexa is being used, and I don't always find Alexa to be all that helpful. I
no.
really don't. I can find the answer myself, or I can look it up, or I can use my own hands or my own fingers or whatever it is to do something myself to find things. I don't need Alexa to do things for me.
Yeah, I agree. If I want to play Spotify through my soundbar, it's much easier for me to just open up my Spotify and put on the playlist, and that's it, instead of having Alexa make a mistake and then I got to...
Yeah.
I already have human beings that I have to correct.
Right. Right.
I don't want to correct the machine.
Right.
And listen, yes, the Boyquarium's laughing. It starts with you two. I already have enough human beings that I have to try to keep in line.
Yes, corralling. It's corralling. That's
it
what
is.
It is
corralling. I don't need to corral robots and listening devices.
Nope.
And there's just something, it's still...
It's intrusive. It feels intrusive.
And it's creepy.
Yes.
And I don't... I understand... You know, I'm still amazed when Debbie and I will be having a conversation and then I open Instagram and it's all ads for the same thing. It's
right.
It's like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Or, you know... And there's nothing that I'm, you know, I'm not making plans to overthrow the government or to commit
nefarious.
Heinous crimes
just feels
in
intrusive.
My house.
It's
right. I just don't want you listening to me all the time.
I already have nosy neighbors. I don't need something living in my house, right?
And
I mean,
I'm already tracked by my iPass and my phone.
Right.
But I choose not to. But I gotta say, a robot butler might be fun.
That would be pretty cool. I can get down with that.
This robot called Sprout walks around. It has a rectangular head. It has windshield wiper-like eyebrows. It shakes hands with people with their grippers. It's nothing like the humanoids being built by Tesla. This is a fun robot. This is like the WALL-E of robots.
And I was looking it up. I was looking up Sprout, and if you love the movie Short Circuit, it looks like a new version of Johnny Five. Like, that's
Johnny
what
Five
it looks
is alive.
Like. Boy Aquarium, are you looking that up? Are you looking up what Short Circuit is?
I
oh
am
my
looking
gosh.
It up right now, and oh, you are exactly right. It's to a T. Wow.
It is. Yeah. It's Johnny Five. Sorry.
But it is, yeah, it's very, it seems like a very friendly robot. It looked lovely.
It's adorable. And it stands about, Sprout stands about 3.5 feet tall. So I've got a whole foot on Sprout there. And it wears a soft padded exterior of sage foam green. And it was started by this startup company, Fauna Robotics, about 2 years ago of secret research and development went into Sprout. Now, their public debut on earlier this week is really, the whole purpose is to jumpstart a whole new industry of building approachable robots for homes, schools, and social spaces. And in a lot of ways, this is going to be a first of its kind, especially here in the United States. We don't have a lot of rapid advancements in artificial intelligence. Elon Musk doesn't count.
No.
We don't have a lot of advancements there. So I think that this is fascinating. But Sprout isn't cheap, Brian.
No. Sprout. What? No, $50,000 for Sprout. And right now, Sprout, I don't know what Sprout does because he can't lift heavy objects.
No.
He can dance, which is cool.
Yeah.
But I, you know,
everybody needs a good dancing robot. Come on.
I would love to sit in the chair and just order a robot to dance like the Emperor. Dance, Sprout. Quickly. Dance. And then he'd spin around. He'd lift up some a teddy bear. He could do that. And he could hoist himself from a chair. So... It's kind of fun.
What I love is Fauna Robotics is very specific because Sprout can twist and floss. Those are the two dances that he can do. So I.
But he can't. He can't nay nay.
He can't nay nay.
He can't nay. He could floss, but he can't nay nay.
He can't nay nay.
Seems weird.
Seems very weird. He also doesn't seem like he's going to take out my garbage, which is really what I would want Sprout to do for me.
Yeah. See, that's it. If I'm going to get a robot butler. I want them to do the dishes. I want the robot to do the laundry.
Like the stuff
I don't want to do.
The stuff I don't want to do. Yeah.
Have you seen the robot lawnmowers?
Oh, yes. We have one in our neighborhood, and it freaks me out every time.
Oh, man. Every time I see one, I'm like, I want one, but I don't want one.
It's like a Roomba for your grass.
Yes.
That's what they are.
And I've seen it in action. I'm like, that is amazing.
Are you
and
seeing
terrifying.
The Boy Aquarium's face right now?
That's a real thing?
Yes, it's a real thing.
I didn't know about this.
You just let it out like your dog, except it cuts your grass.
And just like the Roombas inside, they'll go through the dog poo and track that all over the grass for you and everything else. It's fine.
I saw a video of a snowblower one, too.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh, I haven't seen that one.
That would be fascinating.
See, that's tech. Then again,
those
I sit like the Emperor. I send Sprout out to check on the other lawnmower.
You sit on your deck with Sprout flossing next to you, and then you watch your lawnmower.
It's a whole tech party on my thing. I do worry that they said they use super secret technology, which means Sprout is just the ambassador, and soon our robot overlords will take over, and then I'll be the one who has to dance and cut the grass.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's why AI actually scares me, especially when it lands in the wrong hands. It is 6:59 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. From robots to nationalized elections, that's what we're going to talk about after the break here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.